College Golf Talk is back. Burko and Brentley with you on a Thursday morning. We're laying this down, as I say, each and every week. A little bit later in the show, Alan Bratton, head coach, Oklahoma State Cowboys, joins us fresh off a victory at the Olympia Field, Fighting Illini Invitational. And I know we picked names, Brentley, and I think you threw it out there through day one. I was in charge. You kind of went radio silent the last 2 days. Yeah. So I'm just going to assume that I ran away and hid. There was no Walker Cup letdown as I went. What I went with five Walker Cup players.
Yeah, you absolutely. I didn't even tally it up the last day. It was out of hand and no one on my side except for, you know, I don't even think anyone played well that I picked. So,
fair enough. Yeah. It's only September.
Wasn't good. We're on to the Ryder Cup. Hopefully, you know, hopefully my picks will do a little bit better for that.
All right, let's start right there at Olympia Field. Florida had a big lead starting that final day. The Cowboys, the national champs from last season, shoot 5-under in the last round. They get the victory over the Gators. Texas Tech third. Tim Wiedemeyer wins individually. But a lot to kind of delve into. You know, you start with Texas. They kind of bounce back. You know, it's their third tournament. And we're, what, September 25th? I mean, they've had a heavy fall campaign on three courses. And I don't think you or I are raising any red flags about John Field's team. But it's probably nice to see them a little more competitive relative to what they did last time out.
And with some different lineups too, right? Tommy Morrison, you missed an event for the Walker Cup. Luke Potter hasn't been in the lineup, I think, all season. He played as an individual this week, tied for 30th. But there's some signs. Their heavy hitters didn't play particularly well, but in that tie for second is Matthew Comegys, who's the transfer from Texas Tech, who took the medical redshirt last year after left wrist surgery. And we may have mentioned it two or three podcasts ago, but you know, the wrist is one of those injuries that you just never know how you're going to respond after that. And to see Matthew playing well, that's a positive. And so, again, it's September 25th, like you said, there's no reason to be counting Texas out. However, I think my preseason number one ranking was a little bit too generous. I've definitely bumped them down a little bit since then.
Yeah, September, a lot happens. We discuss it each and every year. New faces, depth, what are the lineups going to look like? Don't get me wrong, every coach wants their team to play well. But the longer I cover this, there is that understanding of, yeah, we want to win, but let's figure it out in September, October, November. Who's good? Who's not? Who might surprise you? Mess around with the lineup, see who gets through qualifying. I truly get a bigger sense of the powerhouse teams in men's and women's golf of, okay, if we finish 10th in September, we don't love it, but maybe we need to finish 10th in September or October and get them in gear. So, you know, there's always that underlying thing, if you're a coach, especially a longtime coach, you say it's okay. It's okay to struggle in the fall. You know, you see the peaks and valleys. Arizona State, they came back down to earth a little bit. Potential concerns from the ACC. I think the longer we do this, coaches realize, so be it. It's April, it's May. That 6 week window is truly what defines your season.
Yeah, you mentioned the ACC. Other than Virginia, who obviously was the national runner-up last season, there's some teams that I think have shown a little bit of concern so far. You think about Florida State having to replace Luke Clanton, North Carolina having to figure out how to plug some holes left by David Ford, Maxwell Ford, those guys. So I'm a little bit concerned about that conference as it relates to, you know, making match play potentially in 5 or 6 months. You know, going back to Texas too, you talked about it's better to get things out of the way now. I'm old enough to remember a Texas team back in 2022 who had two of their best players break their arms in late November, early December, and they went on to win a national championship. So there's always hope, I guess, is my overarching message.
Yeah, the Cootie twins in a race, same bone in that wrist, forearm area. So
might be the most bizarre story that I've. I mean, you've been around a lot longer. Anything old. Ring a bell?
No, nothing like that. I mean, let's be honest. How many twins have we seen? You know, they always say there's that kindred connection between twins. You think of the Ford brothers that are actually triplets because they've got a sister, the Cooties. No, I can't ever recall, maybe beyond a food poisoning incident or something, where two or three players wake up not feeling their best. But I don't think at any point this early in the new season, you know, are there major concerns. But to your statement, hey, you had Texas one. Maybe they're the seventh ranked team right now. And maybe there was a team you had at 18th that gets into the top 10. It's all slow and steady, right? But Olympia Field's a good one. Again, Oklahoma State won. Alan Bratton, their head coach, joins us in just a little bit. The Tyndall, Peter Kim, a win, leading BYU to a five-shot victory over Utah. You posed the question, BYU, are the Cougars an NCAA title contender? We talked about it kicking off the fall campaign. Possibly the most loaded team they've had in my nearly 30 years of covering this, and your 10 to 15 being around it. Again, early, they're a 50-50 prop right now, in my estimation, to be playing Tuesday morning at La Costa next May.
I bet you a year ago you didn't think that that question would be posed on this podcast. Is BYU a NCAA title threat? But I actually, like, we talked about this too. I almost had them ranked in the top 10. And part of the reason I bumped them down a little bit preseason-wise was because Cooper Jones is still on his mission. He's not back yet. Haven't seen Jackson Moss get action in the starting lineup as well. But keeping in the Oklahoma State theme, Parker Bunn's been a great addition for them transfer-wise. I certainly didn't expect him to contribute. I mean, T26 at the Tyndall's not exactly great, but you know, it's not exactly bad either. And Peter Kim, I'm glad he finally got out of that bunker from the NCAA championship on the eighth hole. He's finally out of it, played well, got an individual victory. And Kihei Akina, he's doing what we thought. And I don't think the transition to college golf is going to continue to be all that hard for him.
Other results on the men's side, the Tucker Invitational, Long Beach State, a five-shot win over New Mexico. Colorado USC tie for third. The Lobos, Emil Albers wins as an individual. And then the Earl Yestingsmeyer Invitational, Ball State, the pride of what? Muncie, Indiana. They defend home turf by three over Butler. And if my memory is good, I'm not sure, when I was at Florida, we had a transfer come from Ball State, Tony Sories, who was a strong contributor for the Gators for a couple of years. And not to get emotional, I know Tony's battling ALS, and a lot of us have tried to reconnect and send good thoughts. So when you each and every week, Brentley sends out a rundown to keep us on the track. So when I see that, I think of my good buddy Tony Sories that started his college career at Ball State, and wish him all the best. That's a great name. Earl Yestingsmeyer. That's like Sam Carmichael at Indiana.
The late, great Earl Yestingsmeyer. No, Mike Fleck's done a great job with that program. He does a great job hosting tournaments. I know him and Lance Ringler from Golf Week. Speaking of Golf Week events, as we're going to move to one, but I know they've combined a little bit on some things. I think the Put Me In Coach Invitational, where you have guys who are trying to break into the lineup. It's kind of a individual event that they team up on, but good guy, and has done a great job with that program.
Look at you with a natural segue from the men to the women, the Golf Week Red Sky Classic, USC, record win over Pepperdine, LSU, Arizona, Kansas. Jasmine Koo, the standout sophomore for the women of Troy, and Kylie Chung, share medalist honors for the Trojans. Why do you think this was a needed win, a significant victory for head coach Justin Silverstein?
Well, first off, this tournament's absolutely awesome. Just outside of Vail, the teams get to stay in the village. Red Sky, beautiful golf course. The only thing you have to watch out is there's a lot of moose that that kind of run around, and sometimes they can get on the greens and do some damage. But hopefully Lance avoided those moose interactions this year. But a great field, too. This tournament really, I don't think, has gotten quite this good of a field in a long time. When you think about LSU, I know Rocio Tejedo is still not broken into the lineup. It's not injury. I think she's has some things in her game that is keeping her from being in the lineup. But so the Tigers not at full strength yet. But for Justin Silverstein, for this team to go to a new event, new golf course, and break some school records in the process. I think it was their 54-hole school record. They might have had an 18-hole in there as well. And then have four players in the top 10. I don't think anyone finished outside the top 13 or 15. And we know what Jasmine Koo is capable of. She's won three or four times already in college golf now, one of the best putters in amateur golf. But Kylie Chung, she's really, her trajectory since the summer has been unreal. She won the SoCal amateur at Torrey Pines, chipped in to win that. She was 15th at the Annika, and now ties Jasmine Koo, a first-team All-American, for her first college win. If they could get this from Kylie Chung, you're looking at a Trojans roster or starting lineup that now includes Elise Lee, who's been absolutely nails for them since transferring from Northwestern. Catherine Park, a senior now, one of the best iron players, ball strikers in the country. This is a really, really scary team, 1 through 5 now, with a little bit of depth too. So not quite, you know, living on the razor's edge as they were a season ago.
Mason Rudolph in Tennessee, Vanderbilt beating Mississippi State by 2. North Carolina, Arizona State, Baylor rounding out the top 5. Sam Whateley, the medalist for the Mississippi State Bulldogs. That is a team that when you look at the last 4 or 5 years with the change in coach, and they're good. You know, they're that next level good. They're that 7-15 kind of good in my estimation, but you do wonder what the ceiling is, you know, for Mississippi State. You know, Vandy winning at home, they should. I'm always a big believer, right? Take care of your business on your home turf. But I don't know. There's something about Mississippi State, and you look every couple of years, they put out a really good player, Julio Lopez Ramirez, a couple of years ago. I would think Starkville is not the easiest place to recruit to, but they are a program that, you know, that could be someone to keep an eye on the rest of the season.
I thought it was interesting. Well, for one, you look all the way down at the bottom of the leaderboard, poor old Georgia Southern.
Do they have a team? Do they, can they even field 5 anymore?
They have players now, but apparently still have some kinks to work out. But I kind of look at Arizona State desperately in need of Pimpis Rubrong to get on campus in January, need that fifth score, and really she's going to be a 2 or 3 score for them. And then North Carolina, Megan Stryker, the reason I point her out is she played in this tournament, did not play particularly well. I think, you know, she probably, you could argue, is a top 20, top 25 individual in college golf. Did not play particularly well, but the reason I point her out is because yesterday marked the beginning of pre-qualifying for LPGA Q School, three sites across the country. She is among those playing in pre-qualifying. Now, most of these players will try to advance as far as they can until the final stage, not play that, secure their Epson Tour status, which they can defer to next summer, and that'll be it. But some interesting names, Berko. You look at Suvi Chaya, Vinay Chatham from Oregon, Cindy Hsu from Texas. Those are kind of the two big ones. The twins from Eastern Michigan, Jasmine and Janae, Katie Cranston and Karis Warby from Auburn. SMU's got a couple with Mackenzie Lee and Emily Odwin, who transferred from Texas a few years ago. Emma Bunch, who won 5 or 6 times a couple years ago for New Mexico State. So there's some names there, and obviously we haven't talked to all of them. We don't know if they would turn pro to play in the final stage of Q Series or not. But yeah, there's quite a few names, and I know some coaches are hoping that they don't get that phone call here in a couple months saying, yeah, you know, I'm actually going to see if I can try to go get my LPGA card. Thanks, but no thanks, coach.
Worst time of the year for women's college golf. You get me riled up. You get me on my soapbox. There has to be a better way. And I know there are conversations. When I was flying home from the Stevens Cup, sat alongside a couple of women's coaches, and there have been initial talks about getting an LPGA U, very similar to PGA Tour U. And as we were all sitting in O'Hare Airport waiting for our flights, we kind of mapped out what it could look like. Give them a reason to stay. Give them the carrot at the end of that stick dangling around. I hate it each and every year for these coaches. We've seen it, Alabama, Washington a decade ago, UCLA, that they're a top five teams. And I always go back to Alabama. They won their first two events of that fall 6, 7, 8 years ago by literally 30, 40, 50 shots combined.
Well, I think they set the NCAA record that fall at Oklahoma's event, the Schooner.
Correct. And they lose their two best players. And then, no disrespect, you had people in the lineup that couldn't break 80. And honestly, in my opinion, the program has never been the same since. Yeah. And Mick Potter is one of the great coaches of all time. Hate it. We'll get into it later. Throughout the fall and monitor it.
There's a lot of college coaches that are in the Delta Sky Club.
I might have pivoted from Delta to get a 56-minute nonstop flight from Chicago back to Northeast Ohio, where I
can you not go in the Sky Club if you don't fly Delta?
Oh,
I don't know.
Goodness, no. That would be treason. To walk into the Delta, you have to show.
Don't you get like passes though, like extra
yes,
passes?
But you have to be flying on Delta that particular day. You get in with your boarding pass; it sees your status, etc. But the good news is, my status is locked in for next year for Delta. So let's hope those conversations keep happening. Because that would be a better way. You talk about Katie Cranston, Auburn, without her at the Canadian Women's Collegiate. They beat Kent State by 6, Ole Miss, Virginia, Tennessee rounding out the top 5 there. We talked about the Schooner Fall Classic, Oklahoma State, a 7-shot win over TCU. Sooners, Iowa State, UCF rounding out the top 5. Florida State 6th. What would be a successful season for the Noles is something you pose. And I thought about it last night. I think just making a regional. I hate to say it. Because remember the 500 rule, right, in play. And maybe that won't be a concern as the season moves on. But you lose number 1 and number 2. Lottie Woad, Mirabelle Tang, top amateurs in the game. We love Amy Bond, their head coach. That is tough to replace. We'll see. It could grow. It could develop. I think they'll be hard-pressed to get to La Costa.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Sophia Fulbrook, who was maybe their number 3 or number 4 last year as a freshman. Looking at the scores so far, I say this, you know, a little bit half-serious, but she's kind of all they got right now. I mean, there's some very unproven players in this lineup. So I'm with you. I was going to be a little bit nicer to the folks in Tallahassee and say make an NCAA championship, but I'm kind of with you. I didn't even think about the 500 rule. I haven't looked at their schedule, but I would imagine Florida State doesn't play easy schedules ever. So that could certainly be something that that we could keep tabs on. But yeah, I'm kind of with you now. I think you changed my mind.
That's what I do.
It's hard to make a regional. I think sometimes you take it for granted. And I mean, what we saw last year on the men's side, you know, Clemson ends their, you know, record-long streak. So other than Oklahoma State, on the men's side, there's not a ton of teams that have done it.
Other results on the ladies' side, Lady Paladin Invitational, Alabama, a 13-shot victory over High Point. Missouri defending home Home turf by 11 over Kentucky. Red Raider Invitational. Texas Tech by a dozen over Houston Christian. Nittany Lion Invitational. Penn State edging Delaware by a shot. We reference LPGA Tour U. Maybe it's going to come down the pipe here in the coming years. PGA Tour U, new five, Ben James, Michael Lasasso, Christian Moss, Jay Summey, Tommy Morrison, William Sides up 7 to number 8 after his win at Shore Acres in the Stevens Cup. Matthew Kress up 9 spots to 16th after a fourth place showing at Olympia Fields. That will change each and every week, and see who can secure a bit of status after the NCAAs early June next year. Before we get to Alan Bratton, the head coach from Oklahoma State, you want to have some fun with tournament names. What? Let's give a love, you know, some love to a few events out there that the name alone makes you want to go play.
All right. So I was thinking about this too, and I was going to ask your advice, or if you had any thoughts. We should probably hand out some sort of award, you know, the tournament of the week or the tournament name of the week. But we'll have to come up with some sort of creative idea. But I have a few. I'll throw it at a few options, and I'll have you help me decide which one is the best name of the week. So we have Nebraska's home event, the Get Her Done Invitational. I think that goes without speaking. We have at the U.S. Naval Academy, the GOAT, which was won by Loyola Maryland this week. So the GOAT, the Get Her Done Invitational. And I'll throw out two more. We got the Senator Larry Edgell Invitational, a longtime state senator of West Virginia, Larry Edgell. I tried to do some research. Doesn't seem like there's much, you know, not to discredit him, but not like a ton of notable, you know, maybe rulings or legislative decisions from Larry, but long time, was voted in 4 times, but that's Fairmont State's tournament. So named after Senator Edgell. And then there's a few. There's the Gauntlet, One Day at the Bay, and the Battle for Boston. I don't understand the Battle for Boston. I don't know what they're using, if this is purely just golf or some sort of violence attached. But yeah, so those are the options. I'm kind of leaning toward the GOAT. I like the GOAT.
The GOAT's good. I'm intrigued by the Senator because, you know, then you can kind of personalize it. If you know what I mean, you have to have a true sense of who's hosting, where's that tournament.
Maybe we can name this award after the Senator, the Larry Edgell Tournament of the Week Award.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I don't know Larry Edgell from a hole in the wall, but if he's got a college golf tournament named after him, I'm intrigued.
Sometimes, you know, if you go back far enough in West Virginia politics, you could get in trouble. So maybe we shouldn't name it after Larry. He did anything wrong, but
yeah, you're right. A lot of moving parts. So we'll have some fun with names of events.
So what's the GOAT? Did the GOAT win?
Yeah, give it to the GOAT, right? Give it to the GOAT. Perfect. Well, we're just getting a text that Alan Bratton is pulling into Karsten Creek. So
Karsten, it's Karsten now.
We lost the creek. Where have I been?
We'll have to ask him about it.
Well, I mean, I know there's been a big redo, so maybe the creek is gone since we were last. I'm supposed to know what's going on. It's been Karsten Creek forever. Why are we changing names?
I guess when they bulldozed ASU Karsten, I guess there was an opening. So
holy smokes.
We'll have to ask him about it.
Yeah. Well, without further ado, our conversation with Oklahoma State head men's golf coach Alan Bratton. And as promised, please be joined by Alan Bratton, head men's golf coach for the Oklahoma State Cowboys, fresh off their victory at Olympia Fields. Always good to catch up, my friend. Appreciate you taking some time. Let's get your reaction to a nice final day charge and get a win at a really good golf course in a really good event early in this new season.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. What a treat to, one, get to compete at a place like Olympia Fields. Mike Small does such a good job. The members make you so welcome, and it's a wonderful test of golf. At the start of the tournament, the greens were really firm, which is what you want there. And just a fantastic event. I actually think it's It could be the best college tournament of the year. So to play it early is great. You learn a lot about your guys. And it was awesome for our guys to see that we've got some firepower. So if you do fall behind, to know they have the ability to come back. So I think that was big for our confidence and big for just kind of launching the fall. And hopefully we can figure out a way to not get so far behind.
What did you learn, and what do you look for as a coach, especially considering the fact you're a team that won a national championship? It's all right there. That was at La Costa a few months ago. How do you kind of go about your business of evaluating, assessing, even though pretty much your lineup is a known commodity?
Yeah, I think we're always thinking long term. Every year's a new year. You certainly can't just roll up and gonna win. We have a very good team, but if they don't take care of their business every day, well, there's plenty of teams capable of beating us. So, our approach, it's one of the reasons why you love to go play championship venues like that, is it's gonna expose your game if you get sloppy. And we hadn't won that tournament in 7 years. So, it's always a strong field and a strong test of golf. So I think our guys learned a lot about their games. Again, if you short side yourself out there or don't stay in the present or don't execute, any of those things will expose you at Olympia Fields. And the second round, it got us. We were putting it on the course pretty good. I think we made the turn at 6 under on the front nine, which is a very good round. I looked up what the lowest we had ever shot there was 7 under in one round. After we played the final round, I had Ryan look that up. So the second round we were rolling pretty good, and then we spit the bit on the back nine, and Florida didn't. They played an exceptional back nine, so got ahead of us. So lots of lessons, good and bad in there. The first round when the course was playing the hardest, I don't think we executed that well, didn't hit it all that well, but we did a good job of limiting the damage, didn't make very many bogeys, which kept us in the tournament and got us a quality first round. And then again, three of the four remaining nine holes, we played fantastic. We had a little hiccup in the back nine of that second round, but otherwise, all good. And we'll look forward to playing at Notre Dame next up.
Alan, you've always seemed to have elite players. This program's always had elite players. And the thing that we know about those types of guys is they're always playing golf, whether it's Walker Cup or World Amateur Team Championship or PGA Tour events. You have some guys that are going to be bouncing back and forth between college golf and other amateur golf, pro golf throughout the season. How do you keep them consistent? How do you keep them from getting too burnt out? I mean, you've been doing this a long time. What's the secret?
Well, we take a lot of pride in player development. I think our players get better here, whether they were elite players coming in or not. We've got a long history at Oklahoma State that dates well prior to me of guys developing, and that's part of it. And fortunately, we've got some guys that have created those opportunities. And I think every guy on our team would like to play professional golf. Most college golfers say they want to do that. So part of that is playing, and you need to expose yourself to those environments, and you're prepping for the big events, whether that be you've got an opportunity to play in a PGA Tour event or a Walker Cup or prepping. Ultimately, our goal is to get ready for the NCAA championship again. So we do have some guys that have had some opportunities. Ethan has now played a major and a PGA Tour event. Preston got an opportunity to play the PGA Tour this summer. They both, Preston and Ethan, played the Walker Cup, learned a lot, and they'll both be traveling to represent the U.S. in the World Amateur. So great opportunities. I hate hearing something like that from kids saying burnout. I mean, it's golf. And if you want to be a professional golfer, you got to play. Not very many guys are good enough to play 12 or 15 times even a year and play at the highest level. You got to play golf. And we had some guys play weeks in a row. Ethan went Carmel Cup, Walker Cup, PGA Tour event, and then to Olympia Fields. But I mean, give me a break. He had a caddy in all of those. I mean, at Olympia Fields, our guys were like, "Oh, it's been so long since I didn't have a caddy." I'm like, "Oh, we got our prima donnas out here again, So I try to snap them back to reality quickly because you can't, again, that's a great lesson. I mean, he basically played 4 weeks in a row. And you've got to be able to do that. And again, if you're in contention, sure, there's a mental cost there, but that's something to practice and learn. No different than Ethan going over to play the British Amateur this summer and then back for the Open Championship to learn how to go across time zones and play over there, that style of golf, and come back. It's awesome to have that opportunity to do as an amateur, not doing that for the first time as a pro. So all those experiences are valuable. Ethan loves to play golf. I always tell our guys, well, you would be playing every day anyway, and hopefully you're giving those days attention, and it's rare that you get a caddy. So Ethan did a great job with it. He won the Carmel Cup. He played very well at the Walker Cup. It was really cool to see those two paired together. I think he learned a lot in Napa, missing the cut. That, you know, that was, I think, a good experience for him. He got to see what a typical week on the tour is, how they take golf courses, grow up the rough, firm up the greens. And then he was able to put up a quality event at Olympia Field. So I think all of that's going to pay off for all of our guys. Even the guys not getting the firsthand experience can learn from opportunities that their teammates create for themselves.
So I think I've proven myself as not being the best prognosticator. We won't mention the preseason team rankings of me not putting you guys number one, but I always try to guess who your guys' starting five will be, and it always ends up being different. Can you just maybe peel back the curtain on how competitive qualifying has been so far? I mean, we've seen Henry Gwan, your top ranked recruit, not get in the lineup yet. Philip Fahlberg Johnson, who was a part of the NCAA lineup last year, did not play Olympia Fields. Just how competitive has it been these first few weeks of the season?
Yeah, you always have that. You never know how people will adjust to college, and Henry's done a good job of that. I think he's hitting his stride about now, you know, understanding just responsibilities of every day in a whole new environment. Philip missed our first tournament because he was playing a Challenge Tour event in Sweden. That's why he didn't play the Carmel Cup, but he just got beat out for Olympia Field. So that's always good. We're going to play the guys that are playing the best at the time. And again, we take pride in developing 1 through 10 on the lineup. So it's been nice to see some other guys get opportunities to play and our team not miss a beat.
Alan, you were one of the very best to play at Oklahoma State back in the 90s, national champion, Walker Cup, played on the PGA Tour. How would you describe the differences 30 years later now? You kind of touched on it, the opportunities maybe more for some of the kids these days, but from a coaching standpoint, in the NIL world, in the transfer portal, how do you deal with the minutiae that, maybe I'm wrong, I feel like Mike Holder and others back in the day didn't have to worry about so many of the things on your plate and the plates of others in 2025?
Well, I think you have to credit Mike Holder and Buddy Alexander and Larry Penley, a lot of the great coaches from the past, for helping get our sport to where it is now, where you get so many opportunities. I mean, it's as easy to get into a PGA. It's easier than it's ever been to get into a PGA Tour event now. I mean, they'll invite junior golfers. They invite lots of different college golfers. There's opportunity to earn PGA Tour status from your performance. So all of that is a good thing. But along with that, like you said, there's more outside noise than there used to be. You have another voice where it used to be the player and maybe their parent that you're dealing with. Now you have agents involved and just a lot of distraction where, again, you mentioned people are, you've got to navigate your guys through the world of, is this a good NIL deal? Are you selling yourself short? Is this person that's advising you doing a good job? You got to keep guys, I think, away from different ranking things, because again, all of that's just a distraction. It has nothing to do with you developing as a player. But fortunately for me, I'm well versed in that. I went through it myself. I would have loved to have had the opportunities to play in the tour events and learn prior to going out there as a pro. But I've learned a lot since 30 years since I've been out of school. And we've obviously been dealing with lots of elite players and their opportunities, and have seen people navigate it well and then some not so well. So we just try to hopefully have credibility with our guys and just help guide them down this path. they're young men and they get to make their own decisions, but I'm going to give them the best advice I can on all of that stuff. But there's definitely more noise out there and distraction, but at the end of the day, it's all good. For young professional golfers, there's more opportunity than there's ever been. And again, I say professional golfers, college golfers, elite college golfers, there's more opportunity. And then obviously their transition to the tour, and you're seeing a lot of young guys go out there and do great. So thank you to all those coaches that poured into college golf, and like we've mentioned, Ron Bilicki, all the media people, guys like you that care about college golf to grow our sport, and it's in a wonderful spot.
Brently, what do you got for him?
Well, I was actually thinking, when you texted us this morning, you just said Karsten. When did the creek drop? I think that was, I think people are curious why and when
Yeah,
and why.
we've called it Karsten for forever, but with the renovation, officially that's the name. When we built Karsten Creek, there was another Karsten course about the same time that we built Karsten Creek. Arizona State built the Karsten course there at ASU, so you needed something to differentiate things. So as we reimagined the new Karsten, that was something in conjunction with our friends at Ping. We've changed the logo a little bit. The logo is Karsten Solheim's signature. It's the K from his signature with a little bit of a tail off it that looks a little like part of the Karsten Creek logo before. So now officially it's just Karsten, and Andrew Green did a wonderful job with the renovation, and thanks to all of our generous donors that helped us, be able to do that. So our guys get the pleasure of training again at Karsten every day, and pretty exciting to see the opportunities they have.
I was joking with Burko earlier. I go, well, when they demolished Karsten in Arizona, that opened the door. So I was a lot more right than I thought.
You were correct.
Speaking of facilities, though, I forget where I even heard it. It might have actually been on Gary Williams Five Clubs, and it was Jay Billis talking about facilities and rev share. We kind of saw this shift, I think, maybe a couple years ago, away from the importance of facilities in terms of, because why would you invest $5 million in stuff for student athletes when you can just pay them directly? Do you see it shifting back now the other way, back toward the importance of, facilities, where guys are eating, all this stuff for the student athlete, because you're going to be capped at this sort of 22 million rev share number?
I think it really changed if you're recruiting the right kids that care about the right things. And again, I mentioned player development. That's what we've been all about. That's the difference maker. And to do that, you want to have a great training ground and an environment where a kid can thrive. Because long term, the money they're getting in college, that's pretty short term. Our guys are looking to have long careers beyond college, and that's why you go to college, right? Is to prep to be able to sustain a livelihood down the road, whether that's on the course or not. But certainly the money opportunities are much greater for down the road. So, and if you want those, you better get good. So we focus on the things that make you better, and obviously the rev share and all that's a part of bringing in elite players. But we hopefully want guys long term that want to work on the right things and develop into the best teams and the best players they can be.
So I was laughing earlier too. I was watching Victor's Ryder Cup press conference. Obviously, you coached Victor Hovland. You recruited him. I think you were recruiting Christopher Ventura, if I'm not wrong, and when you first discovered him. But he was talking about UFOs again. He was dominating the, he was making everyone laugh, dominating the press conference. But I'm curious, what's your best Victor Hovland story from the time that he was in school, or maybe even after, because he still lives there. But what's the best one, just in terms of, wow, like there is no one else like Victor Hovland?
Well, I wish he'd have gotten into the UFOs back then. I don't know that I have a best story for him, but he's so unique in that way that you have conversations that are different than every other kid. He didn't just want to talk about golf. He can dive into all kinds of different subjects. He's been Twitterless Victor for a long time, and most kids are were into social media or playing video games or whatever it might be, and he's over listening to a podcast about the universe, and again, UFOs and things like that. So you never know what you're going to get. He's a bit of an enigma in that way, and but just fun to be around. And he's been a big part of helping develop our kids over the last few years, for the fact that he's still here and plays with them when he's home, and it's nice to see him out at Karsten.
Before we let you go, Alan, following up on that, how important is that when you look for the right guy to fit the Oklahoma State culture? And although you described him as an enigma, he's unique. That when you're looking at kids, that they have more than just golf that lights their fire to get up every morning, of realizing Victor Hovland is a world-class player, and he can tell you about Area 47 as quickly as he can talk about his cover number from, 172.
Oh, I think that's really important, and I think that's one of the things that makes our team good right now. We've got some guys that do a good job of, when they're at the golf course, they're focused on golf. When they go away from the course, they have some other interests, whether that's, I mean, most of our guys like to kind of fish, hunt. Preston would probably prefer that. I think he plays golf and hopes to have a great living doing that, so that he can have a place to hunt and fish and do those kind of things. So Ethan's very much that way. Eric, Gavin, Philip, we've got a well-rounded group of kids that when it's time to put the clubs away, they're not obsessed with it all the time. And I think that's important. It's important to be a whole person. It's important to enjoy the college experience, and I think our guys do a good job of that. And then when it's time to be serious, they're serious, and I think our results have shown that. And hopefully we can attract similar kids that we're in a college town that's unique. It's not for everybody, but I think that's a limited distractions and a great place to grow as a person, with your education on and off the golf course. And these guys are good leaders in that respect, and should attract the same kind of kids.
I'm going to put you on the spot, Coach. You talk about these guys doing things outside of the golf course. What are you doing when you're not coaching golf or scheduling tournaments or recruiting players to come to Oklahoma State? What's your escape?
My favorite thing would be hanging out with my kids, and a lot of times that's surrounding Oklahoma State athletics. There's always a game, whether that's basketball, football, tennis match, whatever it might be. But I usually hang with my kids, and I'm looking forward to, once I'm going to be a granddad in January. So excited to watch my son go through that with his wife. And my three boys are still here. I've got one getting married in January, so I try to max my time with them as best I can, and that's absolutely my favorite thing to do.
Love the smile on the face from Alan Bratton when he talks about becoming a proud grandfather in just a few months' time. Congratulations to you and the family on that. Alan, always appreciate you carving out some time to join us on College Golf Talk. Congrats again on the win. All the best throughout the fall, and looking forward to seeing if you guys can go back to back next May at La Costa.
Sounds great. I hope you're reaching out for lots of conversation. Always a pleasure talking with you guys, and thanks for what you do for our sport.
Nah, we love it. Alan Bratton, head coach for the Oklahoma State Cowboys, fresh off the national championship, fresh off the win at Olympia Fields. It's good to connect with Alan. He and I in that same age bracket. So I've seen him as a player. I've seen him as a coach, and now he's going to be a grandfather. We're just all getting old, Brently. We're getting old.
I was gonna say that's officially the sign that you're old. Speaking of wanting to live a little bit longer, though, I killed this fly before we turn the recording off, and it's been sitting on the window ledge, and it is now back to life. It's moving around. I didn't hit it hard enough, so we
Well,
gotta end this so I can go
yeah,
smush
you've
it.
got work to do. Finish him off. Appreciate everyone as always for tuning in to this edition of College Golf Talk. Enjoy the Ryder Cup, and we'll do it again next week.